Good morning. It's the 18th of January. Our first reading today is Genesis 31. We read of Jacob as he prepares to leave Laban. I'm going to read to you from Harry Whittaker once again. I read, "For 6 years more, after the long service for his two wives, Jacob continued to endure the hardship which the care of Laban's flocks involved. Through all this time, he experienced the blessing of God in increasing prosperity. Laban saw this prosperity and was vexed by it. Time after time, he proposed a variation of the agreement which had been reached. 'Your father deceived me and hath changed my wages 10 times, Jacob complained, with all justification, to his wives. Presumably, after the first year of the original agreement, Laban had proposed fresh terms of service at each lambing. First, the speckled animals only were to be Jacob's perquisite. Later, the ringed, then the grizzled. Variation followed variation, yet always Jacob came out of the transaction more prosperous than before. To covetous Laban and his sons, there must have been something uncanny about the way in which, against all probability or known experience, the lambing went in Jacob's favour. Jacob doubtless thought that the secret of this unfailing good fortune lay in the various devices which he had unobtrusively practised to influence the character of the offspring. But as time went on, the surpassing success which attended all that he attempted must surely have set him wondering if, perhaps, there were other forces at work on his behalf besides his own skill and ingenuity. The truth of this was made clear to him when the angel who had been the medium of the great promise at Bethel appeared to him once more, this time confirming that all this unexpected prosperity was by the providence of God. Not Jacob's own cleverness, but the promise of God being consistently fulfilled, was the true explanation of this good fortune." After reference to verses 12 and 13 of our chapter, Brother Harry writes, "In other words, Jacob's painstaking application to the cause of self-interest had all been to no effect. It was the overruling control of the angel of the Lord, whom Jacob had taken little account of most of the time, which had prospered his life of service to Laban. The promise given him at Bethel had been faithfully kept, although he had been but little aware of the fact. If a man of Jacob's calibre, and with his remarkable wealth of spiritual experience, was slow to recognise the hand of God in his life, is it to be wondered at that others of a smaller stature, living in a more materialistic world, so often fail to realise the existence of the same essential factors in their lives? The faith which honours God, and which God honours, is that which looks not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. The very fact that the set of one's own human nature and of the hard materialistic environment one is called to live in is against the exercise of faith should teach all the Israel of God the need for a deliberate emphasis in outlook on divine providence. Faith is the key virtue. Without it, it is impossible to please God." This faith, which Jacob was so slow to learn, is a faith which must grow in all who would be reckoned among the Israel of God. The temptation to depend on one's wit and contriving is always present and must be met by a spirit of conscious dependence upon God. The gospel of self-reliance, which the world ever applauds as manly virtue, is altogether wrong. Jacob now is about to travel back to Bethel. Further lessons await him there. Thank you for listening.